Welcome, everyone, to episode 284 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to talk about a bunch of big men: Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, and Zion Williamson. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. Are now being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going better than it is with you, it sounds like.
I am getting over a cold. My wife matched at her fellowship, her medical fellowship match day was last Wednesday, which turned into a lengthy celebration, shall we say. And then they had their holiday party on Saturday night, which was also a lengthy celebration. And I think at the age of 31, my body cannot handle 2 in 1 week. So I have been sick since Tuesday. So I apologize for any sniffles or coughs throughout this episode. But I'm going to power through it. Bear with us.
Was that just a humble brag? Hey, I'm 2 years younger than you.
No, because all my friends here is way younger than me. And one lied about we thought he turned 30 in September. Like, we have two friends who are a week apart, and we're like, cool, we're gonna celebrate both of your 30th birthdays. We found out on Wednesday that he's been lying about his age the entire time we've known him, and he's only 29. So
what?
Yeah, very strange.
Why?
I don't know. We still haven't gotten to the bottom of it. We have our we're hosting our own ugly Christmas sweater party tomorrow, at which point we will confront him further. So I'll keep everyone posted on the details there. But it was
Oh my god, this is like a podcast series.
I know.
I want this.
Yeah, this is the true crime series that we need to actually
absolutely
start. Yeah. All right, Mort. So I wanted to talk about Joel Embiid, and then you made me realize that people maybe aren't following what's been happening with him this week. Maybe it was just in Sixers Twitter. So
I'm from Denmark, man. I don't have, you know, TNT.
I don't watch
Inside the NBA. So that's partly why.
Okay.
But even if I did, I wouldn't get into that why.
Right. So let's start. We're going to get to the inside comments in a second. But so the Sixers play the Nuggets Tuesday night. After the game, Joel Embiid was asked about hyping up the crowd. And one reporter is like, does that feeling ever get old for you? What's it like to have the crowd behind you like that? And Embiid, the TLDR version was like, I haven't done it enough this season. I have not been having fun like usual. I'm still trying to figure it out, but I need to do it more. He said, like, I have fun when I'm talking trash, but that part has kind of been cut. And that's part of my game. I feel like losing that has taken a toll on my game. So he basically just sounded a little despondent, which was, you know, we have mentioned a couple times this season that Embiid hasn't really looked like himself for much of the year. And I think that's a large part of it. You know, there was the fight with Towns earlier this season. And ever since then, like, his maturity got called into question a lot right after that happened, especially, you know, because he went on social media and trolled the ever-living bejesus out of Towns, and then the NBA specifically cited that when doling out the suspension. So it seems like Embiid's more or less trying to be on his best behavior ever since then. But that's not Joel Embiid. You know, like, part of his appeal is that he can play the heel role so well, and he feeds off of the energy of the crowd. So before we get to the inside stuff, what did you think about Embiid's comments about, like, him not having fun and needing to get back to whatever fueled him in the past?
Well, that's slightly concerning to me, that if he needs the verbal vitriol, I guess,
the abuse
to get going. But at the same time, you know, we've seen players of the past have a similar mentality. Like, Gary Payton couldn't shut the hell up.
Right.
That was just part of his game.
Right.
and if that's the way it is, like, fine, so be it. But then the reason I'm nervous is the NBA is a considerably more stiffer league now than it was during Gary Payton's heyday.
Yeah.
You know, you could get away with so much more in terms of what was being said. You could get away with stares and taunting. You get away with so many more things. Where now, if JoJo feels that he's a bit limited in that regard by rules and rule sets and the refs and all that, I could totally understand why he would feel that his game is being somewhat limited, mm-hmm. and his impact is being limited because he has to, like, look over his shoulder all the time.
Right.
I would like for him to find, like, some sort of inner monologue instead. Maybe a similar mentality to, like, Mike and Bird.
Yeah.
Like, who would just have these perceived slides. They wouldn't have to chirp. They would just have to go, oh, really, you just did that.
Right.
Well, you're dead.
Yeah. Right.
And then just do it, you know, in their heads, just like have these perceived things. But I understand it, and I also love it at the same time, because we need characters. The NBA, as we've talked about so many times before, is still an entertainment product. It's a business, but it's also an entertainment product for the fans and all the media pundits and all that. And look, Joel Embiid, when chirping and when trolling and doing all those things, he's a hell of a show,
man.
And I want that. I want the whole Joel Embiid experience. If I ever go back to the States to watch, like, a Sixers game in person, mm-hmm. I would want to see Joel Embiid going balls to the wall, talking smack, dunking on fools, and taunting. I want the whole experience. And when I leave the arena, I want to go to social media and see him just blast whoever needs to be blasted. I want it. I want it all, just for selfish purposes.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I'm not an objective party here, obviously, but I just think...
No kidding.
I do think if that's what gets him going, I'm fine with it. And I know it's a really thin line to walk, because then you have things like the Towns situation. And, you know, he's been called for a number of flagrant fouls this year already. So you need to be careful and not get into trouble or not let opponents bait you into dumb things. But at the same time, I do think there's something, especially with his game, mental domination is maybe not, like, just as big of a part as physical domination, but it's not far behind. Like, with agreed. Hassan Whiteside and Andre Drummond in particular, he has carved out real estate in their head, as he repeatedly reminds them. And even Towns, I would argue. There's, you know, especially after this past confrontation. So there's something there, and then you get into your opponent's head, and then you kind of goad them into trying to take you one-on-one because you're so pissed and you just want to destroy this guy, but you're not, like, Hassan Whiteside is not going to beat Joel Embiid one-on-one. So now you're goading your opponent into less efficient possessions, and you're actually helping your team just by being a troll. So I think there is value in him continuing to, or going back, I guess, to what he did in the past. I understand the impulse that, you know, I got in trouble for the fight in particular. But, like, I said this on Twitter the other night, like, you know, a couple years ago, the hashtag was let Westbrook be Westbrook. And it was basically like, you just have to live with the bad of it. Even if you're going to get the good, you have to live with the bad. And that might not apply as much as now, but that was back when he was, you know, a triple-double machine, but also turning the ball over 8 times a game. I think Embiid, you just got to let him be himself. And if it involves trolling, that's, you know, if that's going to get him going, and we'll get to Thursday night in a second, if that's going to get him going, then that's what you got to live with. Because the version of Embiid that is this, like, MVP dominant player that he promised he would be coming into the year, we've only seen that in bits and pieces so far.
So how did Marcus Saul buy real estate in Joel's head?
I have no idea. We need to ask Al Horford too.
Right? I mean, those are the quiet, you know, the most quiet dudes in the league, I feel like. I mean, they are not chirpers at all.
No.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Like, he just can't figure them out. They're not talking right. whatsoever. It's just like, not saying anything.
Right.
Just, why the silence? What is going on? What are they conspiring to do?
He talks trash, and then they don't respond. He's like, uh-oh, my number one weapon is not working here. Now I'm going to have to actually beat them with post moves. They're too smart for me. This is not good.
No, but I agree with you all the way through. I think when you need, you know, you can look at the stats just as a measure of it. Like, he's clearly a good, solid level behind this year and compared to last year. And part of it is just him being a little bit more passive. He's not being a liability, though. I don't want to go that far. And I know some people are saying that, but I think that's a load of crock.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still giving you, let me just look it up real quick here.
Almost 23 and 12 a night.
23-12, 3 assists and over a block a game, and getting to the line almost 9 times in 31 minutes. So, you know, that is not shoddy production or anything. That is most definitely all NBA production. But, you know, he is a guy who most certainly, you know, 30 points a night is within his realm of possibility. So, and I think he needs to kind of accept that a little bit more because, you know, Ben Simmons is not a natural scorer. I think that's fair to say. That's not critiquing his mindset. He's just he's more of a, you know, a defender, a playmaker. You know, he does a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. His mindset is not coming out and averaging 25.
Right.
And I think with Philly's roster in particular, because Tobias Harris, you know, while he can score, he's averaged 19.4 for the season. He's also not a guy who's going to come out and, you know, put up Kawhi Leonard stats.
Yeah.
Josh Richardson is more of a complimentary guy. Al Horford is, you know, 96 million years old. So, you know, you probably need that guy. You need that one guy who's going to be like, hey, you know what? This team needs a little kick in the nuts, and that's going to be me dropping 45 tomorrow, for example. And I think he can be that player, assuming he just gets motivated. And I think the motivational factor is just him talking and talking smack. So come on, NBA refs, cut him some slack.
Are you sure you didn't watch Inside the NBA this week? Because you basically just boiled down what Charles and Shaq had to say.
I am sure I didn't watch it, but look, here's the thing. I don't know what they said, and I haven't seen it, but the only thing I know is what you told me, and you said they questioned his mentality.
Yeah.
I don't think I did that. I think right now it's just a question of him not being able to find his game because, you know, him talking is a part of his game.
Right.
I mean, that's just – players are wired differently. But did they come up with the whole, you know, not tough enough thing?
So let's get into that because so Tuesday night after the game, Embiid at the end of the third quarter hits this circus shot and then like shimmies out to not quite half court, but like saunters out and does a little shoulder shimmy. And Charles is like, see, that bothers me because he hasn't been dominating enough. Like, you can't do that unless you're dominating. And then Kenny chimes in and is like, I forget the exact quote, so I'm going to paraphrase it here, but he said basically like, I think he's, oh yeah, here, does he enjoy the fruits of the labor or the labor? Because the shaking to the crowd, that's what Barkley's upset about. He's like, well, you weren't dominating to be shaking to the crowd yet. You should still be locked in because you haven't started dominating yet. So what that means is you like the fruits more than the labor. Blah blah blah, is the substance meeting the actual sizzle? And right now, this year, the sizzle is more. And he's too good of a player. He's the best player in his position to be good. He has to be great. Barkley as well, or sorry, no, Shaq as well was like, you know, he had 22 points against the Nuggets. They beat the Nuggets. 22 is good, but Embiid can be great. And greatness is 28, 30, 35 points. Like, they're calling him basically, like, you need to go out and dominate every night. Especially against Denver with Nikola Jokic, who, you know, took the first team All-NBA center spot last year.
Right.
They're saying, like, you know, Charles was saying, like, when I went up against Larry Bird, guys like that, like, I got up for those games. Like, I wanted to prove I was the best. And they called out Jokic, too, who we'll go into later.
Yeah.
But
I wanted to prove I was the best against Larry Bird. Charles, what are you smoking, man?
Well, you know, he's saying, like, I want to dominate against good players to put myself in the hierarchy of...
Okay, all right, look, let me just grab it right there. Okay, Look, I agree with Shaq that you know, Joel can get the 30 points. Mm-hmm. I think that's a – I mean, that's just like in terms of, hey, look, you have more potential. You can do this.
Yeah.
Like you are so damn good. That's almost a compliment. Who said the thing about, you know, caring about the fruits and not the labor?
Was that Kenny? That was Kenny, yeah.
That's a load of BS. You don't get to this level if you don't enjoy the labor.
Yeah.
You just don't. That is some revisionist, you know, 1940s mentality BS.
Yeah.
What a load of crock. That's look, we have, because of you, I have definitely had an ear closer to the Sixers than I otherwise would have.
Mm.
And Embiid is definitely putting in the work.
Yeah.
He's not like Shaq, who came into camp overweight, out of shape, spent half a year, maybe even a little bit more, getting in shape. You know what? I'm so tired of this. You had Charles, who would show up to game, you know, eating donuts and do all this. He had weight problems himself during his playing career.
Right.
Like Shaq had. Like, and they're talking about motivation. You can be this and that. Shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up. What the hell? Both of those guys could have been so much better than they ended up being. Charles hasn't won dick, so I mean, look, that's horrendous. Look, I get what Shaq is saying about the statistical potential, and that one, that's where I agree with him, like wanting to be dominant and all that.
Right.
But it's also perfectly all right to have, you know, a crisis during a season, and I say crisis in like, you know, not literally sense of a crisis, but I mean, Joel might just be struggling with his, you know, identity as a basketball player right now. And I think uh-huh. also that we talked about that with Nikola Jokic a couple episodes back as well. I think that's perfectly fine. These are human beings. They're still trying to find their ways in this league. And as soon as you don't go 100 miles per hour, like here we have the TNT guys, going, well, you know, back in my day, when I had to go to school, I walked 50 miles in the snow without shoes uphill. Like, give it a break.
Yeah.
Give it a rest.
I mean,
it's so dumb.
I think part of Embiid's frustration this year is the offseason changes the Sixers made, losing Jimmy and JJ, bringing in Josh and Al. It has made their defense significantly better. But their offense has very much been a work in progress. And
as we talked about when it happened.
Right.
Yeah.
And the lack of spacing in particular makes it tough on Embiid, because now opponents are even more empowered to send double teams his way. He's had a lot of sloppy, careless turnovers where he's over dribbling and someone reaches in and then he like falls to the ground and tries to draw a foul and doesn't bait the ref. So I think that has frustrated him to some extent. And, you know, he continues to bring up JJ and Jimmy and like how he's supposed to be the closer. He hasn't done a good enough job yet. So I do think part of this frustration is, you know, he's not living up to the expectations he set for himself coming into the year. He said,
right,
I want to win MVP. I want to win DPOY. I want to win 60 games. He has not been that player yet. And on Thursday morning before the game against Boston, Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer asked him specifically about what Charles and Shaq said. And Embiid said, I think they're right. I think I need to be more aggressive, look to impose myself, look to dominate. I haven't done that the whole season. You can see the way it's affecting my efficiency and my stats. Mm-hmm. I get what they're saying. I think they're right. I've got to make a change. He also did say...
Wow. So he actually... Wow. Okay. Yeah. Go on. Sorry. That's very surprising to me.
So he also said, I want to get to the playoffs healthy. The last 2 years, I haven't been healthy. Last year, it was my knee. And then he went back into, like, we got a new group. I'm still trying to get used to it. The way I'm being guarded this year, every time I touch the ball, there are heavy double, triple teams. I'm just trying to navigate through it. So part of that to me implies that, like, he doesn't want to wear himself down. He is selectively conserving himself during the regular season mm-hmm. because he knows mid-April is what matters. And he's worn down the last 2 years. He does not want to get himself in that spot this year. He's playing three right. fewer minutes a game this year. That's kind of, you know, that's the reason you bring in an Al Horford, to preserve Joel Embiid. So, like, his stats were always going to go down because he was not going to play as many minutes. That's all fine and good. But then the Embiid we saw Thursday night against the Celtics, that, like, he emphatically answered the bell. You know, they called for him to be more aggressive. He scores a season-high 38 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, and a 115-109 victory. Al Horford did not play last night. Kyle Quinn, I love him, but he was getting murdered last night. They needed this version of Joel Embiid. So yeah. I don't think, I mean, I do think when Horford plays, they don't always need Embiid at his A game. They clearly don't, because they've won, you know, 19 games this season. You've seen the best of Embiid for a handful of them. But when you get to the playoffs, you're going to need this kind of Embiid, or else you're not going to win anything.
Yeah, and you need it sporadically during the regular season as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just for, like, self-preservation as well, like just or a reminder.
That, right. Oh, like,
I can do this.
Yeah,
I can actually do this on a consistent level. I'm very surprised he actually agreed with Shaq. And Shaq, maybe that's just him not wanting to burn any bridges.
Right.
Or maybe he just agreed with specific, you know, things that were said, because I really find the whole "you like the fruits, not the labor" comment from Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really low.
Yeah,
that's really low. I mean, you know how much it takes for a guy to reach this level.
Yeah,
I mean, you wouldn't be here if you don't like the grind, and he does. Embiid is such a weird case, though. He has a, you know, it's not fair to say strange personality, because I don't think it's strange. He has a unique personality. He is his own man, in whatever capacity that means. And, you know, he himself admitting that, oh, I like to talk, I need that thing. You know, that's a window into his personality. I think the loss of Jimmy Butler is more significant than we might be talking about.
Definitely.
Because those two were buds.
Yeah.
I think he found in Jimmy a kindred spirit.
Yeah.
In a way, who, you know, a guy who just oozes supreme confidence.
Yep.
Just supreme and utter unfiltered confidence. A guy who is willing to put demand on himself and his teammates. And whenever he put those demands on his teammates, he would back them up for himself as well.
Yep.
You know, there's a reason I love Jimmy Butler. But I also understand he can rub people the wrong way. And I think for JoJo specifically, I think he just clicked with Jimmy. And JJ too. You know, he brought up JJ. JJ was like, he's an underrated tough guy in the sense of what he demands for teammates and mm-hmm. himself. Like, there's a great level of accountability, you know, for JJ towards himself and with others, which I think goes under the radar when you really discuss about JJ Redick. him not having those players alongside him, you know, that's like losing, you know, soldiers and friends and whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's significant. Maybe this is just a transitional period for him, just accepting, well, those guys are not, they're not in the court with me. They're not in the locker room with me. I need to self-motivate now. I don't have Jimmy or JJ who can pump me up or do whatever. Now I need to find my own motivation. And I'm not getting it from Ben, because Ben is very introverted, and which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not where I'm getting it. Like, right. Where Mike Scott? Okay. no, I mean, where do you get it on this current roster, right? I mean, Al Horford is arguably one of the calmest dudes in the league.
Yeah.
So, like, where do you get this pump-up factor? Where do you get this emotional flow that he needs?
It's definitely Mike Scott.
Yeah, I mean, it Mike has Scott's to be, right? Mike's
definitely the hype man of the team, no question. Yeah, but it's a
fair point. Right, but you know, while he is, and he's, I love him, but he's no Jimmy, and he's no J.J. Redick, and I think that loss for Joel Embiid specifically is, I think those were significant losses.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, again, I don't think they need this version. The version that showed up last night, they do not need that every night during the regular season. And if he exerts himself that much, they needed it last night. Because, again, Horford was out. O'Quinn was getting killed. They needed that version of Embiid to win that game last night. But, again, it's a long season. What really matters for this Sixers team is mid-April. So I agree with you that they do need him, just in general, to be, I think, not even necessarily more aggressive, because, like, you know, Shaq, like, criticized him for taking a jumper. It was, like, wide open, and he drilled it. And it was like, he needs that.
That's dumb.
Yeah, like, he does need that in his game. He can't always just back people down in the post. I want to see him, I mean, his passing, I've said this a lot this season, I'm going to continue to say it, because his passing out of double teams is improving. And I think that's as much of a key to his game as anything, because teams are going to send doubles at him routinely. If he's making the right play out of those, like, he either scored or assisted on four of the Sixers' first five buckets last night. And two of them, I believe, were One of them was definitely a Mike Scott three, where he posted, got doubled, kicked it out, you know, boom, there it is. And there, I wrote about him for Forbes yesterday as well. And there were two plays in the fourth quarter where, again, they posted him both times. It was like he gets good position against Cantor. James Ennis passes the ball, runs away, like runs baseline to clear out that side of the floor for him. So he's not going to get doubled unexpectedly. At least like he can see it in his cone of vision. The first time he gets doubled, he hits an 8-foot hook shot over Cantor. The next time they run the exact same play, except Ennis doesn't run baseline. He runs just kind of straight toward the basket. Semi Ojeleye goes to double Embiid. Embiid sees it, passes to Ennis, who is wide open under the basket. Easy 2 points. So, like, when he makes... It's more important for him to make the right play than for him to...
James Ennis, right? Just so people don't get confused.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Ennis.
Yes.
There are two Ennises.
So it's more important for Embiid to make the right play than to, like, always try to assert himself
right
in the post. Like, if he's got a guy wide open under the basket, make that pass. Like, you don't need to prove yourself every single time. I just think, I mean, I'm encouraged by the fact that he took the Chuck and Shaq criticism to heart. Like, he didn't, you know, like, lash out against them and say, like, even if he wanted to, privately. But, like, he responded to it gracefully and then went out and, like, proved to these guys, like, okay, I listen to what you're saying. I'm going to put this team on my shoulders some nights when I need to, and this is what I could do. So, I just think... Because we're going to get into Nikola Jokic in a second here. And we're going to have a lot of the same questions with him. It's like, it's hard to get into these guys' heads. I think you're right that the Butler and Redick departures, both for their on-court value and his relationship with them off the court, it's been hard on Joe to adjust this year. So that's just something we have to keep in mind. These guys are human. And it's not fair to expect a Joel Embiid to dominate all 82 games during the regular season when you're asking him, like, okay, great, but also get to the playoffs healthy and then even go up a level there. Like we saw with Kawhi Leonard last year. Right. You need 20 games of load management to get to that, to get to the playoffs healthy-ish. And then he took his game up a level and it was takeoff from there.
This is why I pushed back on the whole notion last summer, or this summer, in regards to Philly fans, you know, basically saying, well, this team is going to be better off without Jimmy. There was a lot of pushback on Jimmy leaving for Miami. Like, oh, he was overrated anyway. I was like, let's slow our rolls a little bit.
Right.
Not just for his play, but, you know, when he landed in Philly, it was pretty clear that those two just hit it off.
Yeah. Immediately, yeah.
Yeah. And I think in the NBA in particular, when you find those relationships, it's important to keep them around. And unfortunately, Jimmy just wanted something else. And Joe might feel a little bit. I'm not saying he feels slighted. I think because he actually said something very supportive about Jimmy. Just you know, doing what's best for him and the family and all that. So, you know, that's all fine. But I mean, I'm sure there's a part of him that's just like, aw.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. So now we've talked a ton about Joel Embiid's mentality. Let's get into another big man who has at least some questions about his headspace this year, fair or not, and that is Nikola Jokic. Tim Bontemps of ESPN wrote an article yesterday with the headline, "What's Wrong with Nikola Jokic? Denver Nuggets Need More from the All-Star Center." And we, much like how we've mentioned, Embiid has not been his MVP self. Nikola Jokic also has not been, definitely not the player we saw in the playoffs last year. You know, he's averaging
right
around 16 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, which is good but not great. You know, it's shooting much worse than he did last year. He was 51.1% overall last year, 30.7% from three. This year, he's down to 46.9% overall, 23.9% from three. And it didn't get as much attention, probably because, who knows, maybe Philly media just took off with it a little more than Denver media did. But they also kind of called into question Jokic's will to dominate in that Tuesday game. They kind of just said he's looked lethargic. And I think that's been a criticism I've seen. You know, our friend of the podcast, TJ McBride, has been kind of harping on that for most of the year. It's just Jokic hasn't, you know, not to get all Chuck and Shaq here, but like Jokic has not looked to dominate as a scorer, at least. Like,
well, he's never, you know, looked to dominate as a scorer. He's looked to dominate in every possible aspect that was required of him at the time. Like in the playoffs last year, he was scoring 25 points a game because that was just what the team needed. You know, Jamal Murray was inconsistent at times. There wasn't really, you know, a staple of guys on Denver who would step up every single night who could be counted on to the same extent. So he stepped up as a scorer. He also pulled in 13 boards, 8.5 assists, and he played almost 40 minutes a night. I mean, he played 557 minutes in the playoffs. And then he played, you know, the World Championships as well.
Yeah.
So I think he's tired. I think the workload is a lot. I mean, he's handling the basketball like a point guard.
Yep.
People are looking at the shot attempts, and they're looking at, like, the shooting percentages. Like, this dude does so much. Might be a good idea to actually get the ball out of his hands just a little bit more.
Right.
Might save himself up a little bit more because, you know, it's a lot. Like, look, the dude was 2.7 assists last season away from averaging a triple-double.
Yeah.
In 31 minutes. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that there isn't a need for him to step up. There obviously is. And obviously he's not playing to his fullest capabilities right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's unfair to always, when a player is struggling, always to go into what is wrong. Let's dissect this person. Like, something is obviously completely wrong. Like, you know, a guy can be tired.
Yeah.
A guy can have life transitions. Like, again, same with Embiid. I think that was relevant too. Like, he's openly admitting, you know, I'm struggling because I can't, you know, lean into my personality. Right. That's a pretty significant thing. If Jokic has similar uncertainties about whether it's himself, stamina, whatever, maybe he's just tired. Maybe he's just flat out exhausted from having the ball in his hands so much and playing international competition and playing so much in the playoffs. Like, maybe it would actually be worth it to just, you know, with LeBron, you know, a couple of years ago when he just kind of took 2 weeks off.
The sabbatical, the in-season sabbatical. Yeah.
Maybe just give Jokic a couple of games off to start to see if that does anything. I mean, I know that in the West, you can hardly manage to lose a couple of games because things change in a hurry there. But, like, think long-term and still short-term.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I'm glad you brought up his minutes in the playoffs especially because, yes, he averaged 25, 13, and 8, but he played 40 minutes a night. Like, much like with Embiid, you do not want Nikola Jokic playing 40 minutes a night in the regular season. Like, that would be so dumb. You have Mason Plumlee. You have guys like Juan Hernan Gomez and Jeremy Grant who can slide up to the five when need be. Don't overtax Nikola Jokic during the regular season, especially, like, because you've been, I know there's concern about this guy and, like, whether he's locked in or whatever, but you still have one of the best records in the West. Like, you're struggling to some extent, I guess, relative to preseason expectations. You're fifth in the West instead of second, but you're only a game and a half out of third place right now. You know, this is not time to panic necessarily for the Nuggets. I hate to even go into this conversation, but it was in Bontemps' story, so we have to at least talk about it. Okay. One of them said, you know, it goes into the whole lack of shooting thing. He says he's just so gifted, and the strangest thing is his willingness to shoot or take over games is often in doubt, and deservedly is called into attention. And then Bontemps writes, so what's going on? The 7-footer's conditioning has been questioned, and at 284 pounds, he's listed as the heaviest player who has played in a game this season.
Yeah.
Another executive says, quote, it's not okay to be included in MVP conversations and not be in shape.
All right, look, that's fair. I think that's fair. I think it's a combination of, you know, with all the basketball that he's played over the summer and playoffs and all that, when you do that at that weight, it just makes it even more difficult.
Right.
I mean, you're not doing yourself any favors. I can't sit here and speculate on Jokic's diet and his, like, mentality towards losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. That would just be guesswork, and I don't – that's not, like – That's not fair to him in that sense.
Right.
Would he benefit greatly from losing weight? Yes. Yes, I would too.
So would we all. Yeah.
And I mean, yes, that is definitely something that needs to be looked into.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. I have to assume that Denver have spoken to Jokic about this.
Right.
I mean, I have to assume that they have a training staff yeah. and, someone who can actually, guide these players through nutrition and all of that. I don't think this is a lack of education. But yeah, I mean, look, this is obviously one area that he needs to improve upon. Mm-hmm. He's still young, 24 years old. So maybe the maturity level in terms of being serious about your weight, maybe that's not just where it needs to be so far. I want to just kind of put it on his head and say, well, you know what? If you're a chubby fellow who's at almost 300 pounds and you're putting up 16, yeah. 10, and 6,
yeah,
that's also very impressive in his own right.
Right.
So maybe this is just about him, not losing the weight, and maybe he's frustrated about it. Like, there could be a million things, and we shouldn't really speculate all that much about that particular, because that's a very close subject. At least Embiid kind of enclosed some of his thought process. Like, for Jokic, I don't remember him basically saying anything about his struggles. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean,
with Embiid, there's a window. There's not here.
Right, yeah. I think even Mike Malone in this Bontemps story said, I don't think there's anything wrong with him. It's just him getting confidence right. back and getting the ball to go through the net.
Yeah, I mean, look, sometimes it's that easy. He's shooting 23.9% from three.
Mm-hmm.
If he has a game where he's just knocking it down and feeling it, like, this is the classic NBA thing, right? You have a game, you get hot, and then you kind of feel that swagger a little bit,
right.
and you carry that momentum into another game, and you might not be as good, but you're still better than usual,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of say, "Oh, okay, I'm doing this," and before you know it, you're on an 11 game stretch where you're shooting the heck out of the basketball. Yes, I think he needs that, but I also think ultimately, Denver is a weird team. I love them. I think they're very fun. Not this year, but generally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have Gary Harris, right? Like, who's just so down the pecking order.
Yeah,
and who is certainly not the player that they hyped up him up to be back in the day. And I think that player's still in there somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be more nervous about, such a major investment. Like, he's better than 11 points a game.
Yes.
A lot better. Jamal Murray, love him, but I don't think he's taking that step yet that you were kind of hoping to see in year four.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting a little bit more, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Glad to see Will Barton has gone back, but, like, he's not necessarily, he shouldn't be the most crucial player on this team.
Right.
Let me just put it that way.
Right.
And Paul Millsap, again, love him to death. Great defender, great complimentary, score and all of that, but he's not a high volume guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you look at the three guys who should be getting the vast majority of the shots, Jokic, Murray, and Harris, it hasn't gone that well. It's three players who could do a lot better than what they've done this year.
Yeah. Yeah, Murray started off well, but has cooled off a bit as of late. Over his last 11, he's down to about 15 points on 42% shooting. He averaged, I believe, around 19 over his first 12. So,
and the three ball, man, that's yeah. I am getting worried. Look, this is a guy who I looked at as being like a surefire 40% shooter from downtown type of talent.
Right.
He's not gotten close to that.
Yeah, he was at, 36, 37 last year? He's down to 34 yeah. this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Millsap, to your point, has played well. But just in general, I mean, like, the Nuggets have, I think, the league's second best defense right now. If you went into the year telling Mike Malone that he would have the second best defense, he's like, all right, great, we're going to be one of the best teams in the league. But their offense has just been surprisingly mediocre so far.
It has. I don't know the explanation to it. I really don't. One thing is just not as great shooting percentages.
Yeah.
I mean, you have one guy on the team who shoots over 50% from the field, and that's Mason Plumlee. One guy. That's not great. And I understand, like, true shooting percentage and effective field goal percentage and all that. But, you know, you're not an effective shooting team. Like, you're 23rd in field goal percentage. You're 16th in three-point field goal percentage.
Yeah.
It's not great. I mean, they're 25th in the league in effective field goal percentage. And they're last in the league in free throws drawn, per field goal attempt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not great.
They have a free throw rate of 16.
Ooh.
They have no player on the roster who average 4 free throws a game. The highest is Millsap at 3.2.
Yeah, that's not ideal. It's
really not.
It makes it hard to generate easy looks in the half court or generate easy points, I should say. Like, that's the point of free throws is, you know, when your offense is struggling, at least you can get to the line and chip in points that way. Them not having it as a possibility has really hurt them. So,
well, I think they have the possibility. I think they just haven't unleashed him yet because he's inconsistent.
Michael Porter Jr.
Look, if there's anyone out there who could change that, that's him. Look, he's what, 6'9", 6'10", a fluid ball handler who can both shoot and get into the paint?
Yep.
Like, that dude, if you give him the chance, will absolutely get to the free throw line.
Yeah. I mean, they played him a bit in the Sixers game, and you can tell he's still raw. He missed some layups that he should have hit, but, like, his length in particular stood out against a massive Sixers team. Like, I'm with you. Michael Porter, you got to just give him minutes and live through. He's going to make some stupid mistakes and miss some easy shots, and you're going to be pissed off at him more nights than not, but you got to just let him play through it because he really does. Once he, or if he hits his ceiling, or even comes close to his ceiling this year, he's what gives you that championship upside. Like, having that, he's the X factor of this team. Like, he can really give you that boost, but I think he just needs the confidence. And there were quotes from him, I think it was after the Sixers game, I forget who had it. I want to say Brendan Vogt. I believe he writes for, apologies, Brendan. I don't remember. One of the Nuggets sites out there.
There are many Nuggets
sites. I know, which is great. So, the Nuggets deserve all the coverage. Yes. But it was basically like Mike Malone doesn't communicate with him in terms of what his role is going to be on every night. Like, he's not consistently in the rotation. He doesn't know, like, all right, cool. At the four-minute mark of the first quarter, I'm coming in every game. It's just, like, very hit or miss. And he wasn't saying it passive-aggressively, necessarily. He's just saying it, like, matter-of-factly. Like, I don't know. And it makes it kind of hard. So,
And that's fair. Like, nobody should blame him for saying that. No. That's just being honest and answering a question.
Yeah. So, I'm with you. I think more Michael Porter minutes. Again, it's going to be rocky. I'm not saying it's going to make them better right away. It's probably going to make them worse right away. But I think that's probably the answer. And it could potentially, I mean, he has the skill set to be a great partner with Jokic, too. Like, that could get Jokic going as well. I'm not worried about this Nuggets team yet. I still think they have, some major potential to make some noise in the playoffs this year. But you definitely need a better version of Jokic than what we've seen so far. We got to see Murray get back to his early season form. And
there's something else, though.
What's that?
Monte Morris and Malik Beasley had pretty significant roles last year.
Yeah.
They haven't had that same role this year. Like, so Monte Morris played 24 minutes last year. He's at 18 now.
Mm-hmm.
Malik Beasley was at 23 minutes, and he's at 15.7 now. Like, those guys were plus 40% shooters from downtown. Monte Morris was one of the most impressive ball handlers we've seen in a while.
Yeah.
In terms of just protecting the ball and being a playmaker and all of that. Like, he was really unselfish, good playmaker for others. And you had, when Beasley was in, like, he was just a gunner from downtown, so he helped spread the court a lot.
Yep.
Those two guys not getting as many minutes undoubtedly has hurt the offense. I know that both of them defensively are not, you know, Jeremy Grant, like, because the addition of Grant has just moved everyone around a little bit
sure.
for him to get minutes, and I understand the logic in that. And Will Barton has returned to normalcy,
yeah,
so he's getting more minutes. But I kind of think it's a problem not relying a little bit more on Beasley and Morris, because that was the strength of Denver last year. That was their depth,
yeah,
especially in the yep. regular season. I know in the playoffs that faltered a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but why not use it here in the regular season when you have 82 damn games to get through?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into the New Orleans Pelicans board, because we are still on Zion watch. He has yet to make his regular season debut. We are basically at the 8 week, or we're going to, in a couple days, I think, is the official 8 week mark.
Yeah.
For when he had surgery on the meniscus. He originally had a 6 to 8 week timetable to return. Kristen Ledlow the other week reported he's probably not going to hit that. And then Mark Stein of the New York Times the other day reported it's looking more like he's not going to make his debut until January, if not later. The Pelicans are 6-19 right now. They have lost 10 straight games. They are 14th in the Western Conference, ahead of only the Warriors right now.
Their fan base are on suicide watch.
Their fan base is on mega tilt.
Yeah.
Let's talk them off the ledge. Or I don't know. Maybe. What do you feel about the Pelicans right now? Like, should they be concerned, or is this just a very unfortunate series of circumstances? But like, their long term future remains great.
Well, that's a very difficult question, because you know, we expected them to be better. Like, there's no two ways about that. We expected them to be better than that they are. They're 6-19, as you said.
Yeah.
It isn't as much as the result as it's been the way that they've lost games.
Yeah.
It's not really the record that bothers me. It's how they are just losing at, you know, they are getting blown the hell out. And like, I watched the Dallas game.
Right.
That was just like, I mean, look, that was like an 11-year-old kid with a magnifying glass just burning ants.
Yeah, completely not competitive from the jump. They lost 130-84, and then on Wednesday, they lost to the Bucks without Giannis, 127-112, but it right. wasn't even as close as the score would indicate. Like, they've exactly. gotten thumped twice in the last week.
I'm still high on the potential.
Yeah.
I still like their players individually.
Yep.
I am very, very nervous that this team has checked out on Alvin Gentry, who is a great offensive coach. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very unfortunate that this bad start might have had him lose the locker room. I definitely hope that's not the case, but it seems that there are enough rumblings to make it sound like that is the case, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to do here if I'm Gentry or if I'm David Griffin, because like, this is a good group in terms of talent. It just hasn't fit, and they're young, and you know, I think he's under-delivered. Yeah. But at the same time, like, you needed all the young guys to get shots and minutes and opportunities. And like, it's, again, we talked about how they have that 1 foot in like win now with Drew's presence there, and right. 1 foot like in the, you know, development pool.
Yep.
I think it's been difficult to balance. Like, Brandon Ingram, obviously, I love the, you know, the improvements there.
Yeah.
He's a 41% 3-point shooter all of a sudden, like, after being a reluctant 3-point shooter in LA.
Yep.
Like, this was just a matter of him getting out of Tinseltown, which I think was telling in many ways. Like, Lonzo Ball is better. He's still not where he should be. Josh Hart has suddenly become like a phenomenal rebounder out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Jackson Hayes shows promise. I mean, there's a lot to like there. Nikhil Alexander-Walker got potential. I just don't think this team has... I mean, they're playing in the West, which is tough. So, you know, wins are going to be hard to come by. And maybe we overrated them significantly coming into the year. But even so, like, it's almost like they've given up when they enter the ball game. Like, if their opponents go on like a first quarter run,
yeah,
they just roll over. There's really no bite or fight in this team where I'm just like, what? What is going on? I have one theory, and it's like really just like broken logic potentially. But in the preseason, everything kind of, you know, revolved around Zion.
Right.
Everything was Zion.
Right.
And you just, I saw quite a few games with them in the preseason, and every game they played, you had opponents just keyed in on Zion. You could see at times, there were a couple guys on Twitter who took like screenshots and posted where you had like literally five opponents with their heads turned towards Zion. And I think maybe they tried to just make him too big of a piece in preseason, and then when he went down and regular season started, it was like, oh, crap. Like, right. We don't have this right. magnet, you know, this magnet anymore.
Yeah.
And now we have to find our shots ourselves. And while Brandon Ingram has been fantastic, he will never, I'm sorry to say, gain the same sort of attention as Zion.
Brandon Ingram better than Ben Simmons? Brandon Ingram?
Well, Bill Simmons is going, you know, on that thing.
And, right. Yeah, I'm never going to let that one die. That's going to be a thing all year.
Yeah, well, you know, Ben or Bill, he probably wrote that tweet while he's watching Cheers.
So right. He's betrayed his only son. I can't believe it. I mean, look, Zion not playing the entire year is obviously a huge blow to this team. Derek Favors has also played 9 games. Derek Favors was going to be a big part of this team. Unfortunately, his mother passed away over the week of Thanksgiving, and he's been out dealing with that, which is completely understandable. Like, of course, it's hard to get in a good headspace after that for a couple weeks. And if Pelicans fans, I haven't seen any that are like criticizing him for it. But if you please just like get run over. Just go play in traffic or something.
No, I think it's pretty safe to say most of them have been very, very understanding.
Yeah, I hope so.
I have not seen a single tweet. And if you know that people are civil on Twitter, you know that there's a consensus.
Right. So that's a good sign. But, I mean, that is factoring into their slow start. I mean, you're right. Like, Drew Holiday, he's been good. But, you know, for a guy who David Griffin was hyping up as an MVP candidate coming into the year.
I was going to make a joke. Like, does this hurt Drew Holiday's MVP chances?
A little bit, yeah. I think he is slightly behind Luka and Giannis right now.
Slightly.
Still a lot of time to make up. But, yeah. I'm still just not – I'm not that worried about the Pelicans. I mean, like, the fact that Ingram has taken such a step forward is a great sign for them. If this is for real, and if he can maintain this when Zion comes back, then you have two members of a big three already. And Drew, I would argue, is also in that mix. So, like, you've got the top-end talent already. It's just one guy happens to be hurt, and then your other center, you know, you're playing Jahlil Okafor as 20 minutes a night. What do you expect? Like, you don't have, you know, Kenrick Williams is getting 25 minutes a night. Jackson Hayes, who I like his talent, but I wouldn't have gone into the season thinking Jackson Hayes is playing 21 minutes a night. It's just like,
unfortunately, he's at least delivered in those 21 minutes, but I agree. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, you know, he's still raw. He was always going to be kind of a project. He's putting up decent numbers, but, like, you wouldn't want to necessarily throw him into the deep end for a team that, you know, entered the season as a fringe playoff contender. Look, I mean, Lonzo Ball has missed a bunch of time as well. Like, it just so happens that they've had a bunch of injuries, unfortunately, two to the front court. And, you know, we saw it with Phoenix, too. When you lose Ayton, they had Baines, and they were fine for a while. But then Baines went down, and they started losing a ton of games. Like, when you lose all of your talent at one position, it suddenly becomes very hard to win games, especially when those are your top two rim protectors. So I still think the Pelicans have a ton of long-term upside. I'm not concerned about this team's future at all. I don't get the calls for Alvin Gentry to be fired. Has he maximized the talent on this roster? I don't know. You could probably, you know, poke some holes in his rotations, especially. I know there have been people who are saying, like, J.J. Redick should have been in the starting lineup sooner, but he started 20 of the 25 games. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's not he didn't like that wait that long to make the change. That's not the reason they've lost 10 straight. It's just they're depleted right now. And I think when Favors comes back and when Zion comes back, we're going to have a totally different perception of this team. If anything, right now they're in line for, you know, a great lottery pick. And if you add
I was just about to say that. Like, could you imagine if they add like Anthony Edwards next year?
Cole Anthony?
Yeah.
Like they could just have – they already have one of the best war chests in the NBA in terms of the picks.
Mellow ball.
Yeah, yeah. Like, in terms of the young prospects they have, the picks they got in the Anthony Davis deal. Like,
yeah.
They're fine. I get being frustrated with how the season has gone, but I would just remove my finger from the panic button. It's one season, man. It's 25 games. It's not even a full season. Like, you – when Zion comes back, he might be fine. He's not going to play back-to-backs as well they should. I don't blame the Pelicans now, especially now seeing what's happened in the last 10 games. They should not rush him back at this point. Like, if there's any impulse to, like, bring him back to get the fan base more invested or to to salvage the season, dear God, do not do that.
Yeah.
Like, this kid is your future. He is the franchise centerpiece, hopefully, for the next 10-plus years. Do not rush him back before he's fully healthy, because he's already, you know, David Griffin has repeatedly said this kid is just so unique because, you know, he's 6'7", 285. It's hard. There aren't other players like him. You don't want to put more strain on those knees already. That was the concern with him coming into the league, is like, can he stay healthy? Is he going to put too much pressure on those knees? He's already had the one knee injury. Do not rush him back from a knee injury just because you're like, oh, well, my fans are pissed off.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, if they rush him back, then whatever happens is completely their own fault.
Yeah.
It would not benefit them in the long run.
No.
If he goes down again.
No.
Or if he's wobbly or anything, like, then I would rather just see him basically sit out the year, Blake Griffin style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if that's if whatever is happening in his recovery, they said he hasn't had a setback per se. It's just like they have certain benchmarks that they want him to pass, and he has yet to fully pass him. He's doing on court work already, but yeah, David Griffin was on the Fox Sports New Orleans broadcast somewhat recently. He's like, if we get outside of the 8-week window, it's because he hasn't met the metrics for return to play that are laid out for him. And then he said, we've been more cautious with him because he's 19. He's still growing. He was 285. That's a different type of player. So we're obviously going to treat him differently. But there's been no other setback or mission except to get him back on court as quickly as possible. So they're not holding him out to, like, tank. That's not what's going on either. But they are being cautious with him as well they should. So, again, I get the frustration here because expectations were so high coming into the year, but you just have to keep the bigger picture in mind. Like, you weren't going to win the title this year anyway. I know you want to see this kid who's, you know, supposed to make you forget all about Anthony Davis, and maybe that's part of it. You know, seeing how well Davis and the Lakers have gotten off to start the year makes it more painful because you remember, like, oh, man, this guy, this is what we had for so long. But, like, Zion's going to be really good. Just stay patient for a little bit longer, and it will be worth it.
Right. I have nothing to add.
Good.
You basically just summed it up. Right. It can only go bad if you rush.
Right.
And just please don't fire Alvin Gentry.
Yes.
I don't think it's necessary. Anything when people get back, you know, Zion get back, and you like reshuffle some of the roster over the summer, I think you could absolutely find value in retaining him as a head coach.
Yeah. Well, then let's end with a team that we've unfortunately talked about too much lately. But if we're talking about teams that need to be patient, they are the worst example of that. The New York Knicks. Because Shams Charania of The Athletic had a mailbag yesterday, and he reported on their potential head coaching candidates now that they fired David Fizdale.
This is so sad. I know where you're going.
Here is what Sham said. The Knicks want interim head coach Mike Miller to finish the season in the position, but I'm told they have a short list of potential in-season candidates, including Jeff Van Gundy, Mark Jackson, and Tom Thibodeau, should the team's faltering season necessitate another move.
This is why Knicks fans can't have nice things, Brian.
Well, wait, here's the kicker. This is my favorite part. No matter when the Knicks make the hire, their vision for the next head coach is clear, I'm told. Someone who has the stature and ability to have success in the New York market.
Oh, I'm so tired. I'm so tired.
It's just like, what the? Oh my, it's so funny. It is. Which one would be the funniest? I don't even know.
Mark Jackson, of course. Probably. Mark Jackson, probably. Because look, former Knicks guards are gonna hype up the fact that he won Rookie of the Year for him back in like '89. Just he's even relevant, and they're gonna focus on his togetherness. Like, yeah, look, he made the Golden State Warriors preach together or pray together or whatever. That's true. Fantastic, like. God, this is all so dumb. So let's break it down, okay? Mark Jackson, not a good head coach. Correct. Like, he routinely would leave the Warriors to go, like, for religious reasons. Like, just not reliable. You are, if you are an NBA coach, like, no, you're earning a ton of money to actually do your job. That's just not a starter.
Also, probably not a good sign that someone took over with the same talent and immediately brought... like, turned your team into a dynasty.
Correct. He is basically Jason Kidd. This was a Jason Kidd, Mike Budenholzer situation. He's the Jason Kidd. That's not great.
Right. He's the caterpillar. Remember he made the analogy? Like, you got to credit the caterpillar before they turn into a butterfly. I'm the caterpillar. The very hungry caterpillar. God,
that's so horrible, but that's Jackson. So true.
I know. It was so funny. Yeah. But, yeah.
So we have that. Yep. The Mark Jackson caterpillar theory.
Yep.
Then we have Jeff Van Gundy, who hasn't been a coach in, like, 35 years.
Right.
Like, right. Which just doesn't... like, he's not relevant. He's just on TV saying dumb stuff
right. half the time. And he hates the NBA. He hates basketball. Let's put that in perspective as well.
Right. And look, here's the thing. He is not going to be fond of the way the players are right now, with the freedom the players have in both their contractual situations and the way that they run an offense and all that. So that would be a catastrophe.
Correct.
Then you go to Tom Thibodeau, who's probably the best coach of the three. Like, let's be honest, in terms of X's and O's and all that. But he will, look at R.J. Barrett and go, why aren't you playing 55 minutes a ball game?
Right.
This is something is wrong. So let's go all in on that one. man. And then here's the problem with Tibbs. Like, even if you figured out, the minutes thing.
Mm-hmm.
He just could not figure out how to stay relevant in the league. So here's the thing. He revolutionized defense initially.
Yeah.
Tom Thibodeau is a big reason of why the NBA have seen a three-point increase.
Mm-hmm.
He would ice the pick and roll every time, just force defenders baseline, and it worked. It was a great scheme for that era. The Bulls were amazing defensively because of it. And then teams were like, oh, so how do we stop this? Because everyone is copying tips now and it's working. Like, wait a second. It's basic blitzing or icing the pick and roll. They can't really do that if we take a lot of threes. Mm-hmm. Like, because then we'll just get a quick screen and we'll shoot off the screen. Like, that's logical. And that worked. And Tips could not adjust to that. He had no plan from what to do that. When players started to taking threes at a higher level, he had nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So, like, even if you figure out the minutes crunch, it's like, I'm not sure his defense would be even remotely as effective as it used to be.
Right.
And the Knicks would hype it up.
Oh, yeah.
Yo, Tibbs is a great defensive coach. And yeah, he was. Not anymore, necessarily.
Yeah. It's all so Knicks to go for, like, the big names rather than the best fits.
And is Mark Jackson a big name? I mean, is he? Or are any of these, like, big names? I think, like, big names, I always associate, the term big names with talent.
Right. Well, no, they do not. They just want someone with a stature who can win in New York, whatever that means.
Well, they're not going to win in New York. They're going to lose in New York. Right. So that's – but look, okay, so I am of two minds of this because on one hand, I actually do legitimately feel bad for Knicks fans.
Yeah.
And I want to see them actually enjoy basketball again.
Of course.
But at the same time, I also want to see this thing just burn and blow up and right. be as dumb as it can be. Because look, eventually, then things will have to change. Eventually, hopefully, fans are just going to pick up on the fact that this team is not going to change before they don't show up to games.
Correct.
This needs to go so badly, so poorly, that fans simply, organize and unionize or whatever and just go, we are boycotting the Knicks.
Yeah.
Like, you are going to get some fans in the seats because we can't get everyone.
Yep.
But, like, we're going to cancel season tickets.
Yep.
We are not going to turn in on TV. We are not going to do all these. We're basically going to act like China and pretend you don't exist.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my God. One of my followers, I forget, I don't have Twitter pulled up right now, so I apologize in advance, but they suggested they should just hire all three, like one as head coach and then two as the assistants.
Go for it.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic. Yeah, well, yes. Let's do it. Yes. Absolutely. So, we already talked at length about the Knicks, but I just have to ask this question. Is there a scenario, like a realistic scenario, and I'm really not trying to be a dick and I'm not trying to be humorous here. I'm really not. Is there even a legitimate, realistic scenario wherein these Knicks, within the next 5 years, gain a proper foothold in the NBA? Because at this point, I'm so far out of them in terms of my belief in Dolan.
Right.
And in the ability to just think logically. That I think this is going to be the worst team for like the next decade at least.
Until they fire Mills, no. They will be the worst team in the NBA.
Well, they're probably going to fire him this summer, but even if they fire Mills, even if they get Masai, man.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's the scenario in which they might be able to. Like, if they get Masai and then again, just hands off, like as we talked about last episode. There is a world in wherein they could be good because they're going to continue getting a million lottery picks. Just, like, I mean, any team can be good. It's just bad management and bad ownership takes over at a certain point. So,
but do you trust James Dolan to give?
No, God, live, no.
Right?
No.
That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I trust James Dolan to do one thing.
Screw up at every possible turn.
Well, that too. But hand out CDs for free. Ha!
Yeah, that's accurate. All right,
that's it. That's what I trust James Dolan to do.
That's enough Knicks talk. We've tried to be done with them last episode, but this Shams report was just too funny not to acknowledge. But again, Knicks fans, you know my theory. You're allowed to amnesty your fanship.
Yeah.
Join another team until they get rid of everyone.
Absolutely. Like this news has to be devastating for all of you. And I'm not even kidding. I mean,
no.
Man, I'm so glad that I know that I have affiliation somewhat to the Bulls, and they're in a somewhat similar position. But over the years, I've distanced myself from like the idea of fanhood, yeah. And it's been one of the most freeing decisions I've ever made.
Yeah, the worst part for both or for Knicks fans is that they had to know this was coming. Like in no way was this a surprising list of candidates. It was just so perfectly Knicks, but.
Knicks fans, come join me in Dallas. You don't have to be Dallas fans.
Yeah.
Just join me on the Luka train, man.
Yeah.
Come on. There's room for everyone. I've been enjoying myself a lot just watching Luka. Just come. We'll talk. Just come. Follow me on Twitter. Let's talk Luka. Like, let's not discuss the blue who shall not be named. Just let's talk Luka.
Yeah. Perfect. And hey, they were already Kristaps fans, so it should be very easy to transition to the Mavericks.
Oh God, that means there's an avenue for revisiting like PTSD
right.
experiences.
Right. Well, they could just pretend that they're still cheering. Cause I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. Knicks fans like Kristaps more than they like the franchise. So just this move with Kristaps.
This is true. Yeah. Kristaps and Luka doesn't get better. Come on, guys. Let's do it. This is just going to be like the biblical, like walking the desert.
Right.
Just part the changing Red Sea. Teams.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, on that note, Bort, we are going to get out of here. The December 15th is quickly coming, which means players who signed this summer are eligible to be traded. So we are going to have a lot of trade talks in the coming weeks. So stay tuned for that. You can find all of our latest episodes on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles. So give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker. So,
are we being hosted now? Our first
we
now?
Are, we are,
like, we haven't been that over the past year and like a half.
We are continually being hosted and grateful for being hosted on Spreaker. So follow them on Twitter at Spreaker as well. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen, the Christmas Grinch. Mort, have fun continuing to be miserable for these next couple weeks.
Well, thank you. And look, I'm just going to say, you're sick in December, so if that doesn't prove that December sucks, I don't know what does.
My birthday's in a week. And the Sixers just beat the Celtics. I'm in a good headspace right now.
Well, feel better.
Thank you. Thank you, Beth.